about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
I'm sore. I am super sore this morning. One of my great adventures coming to work this morning. I drive a one-ton crew cab, Dewey's bed on it, weighs a lot, going down I-40, talking to my only landlord, Bruce, on the phone, and boom! Smoke flying out from behind my truck, blow out right on I-40. No way I'm changing a flat on the shoulder of I-40, not unless I have to. So I got her slowed down, stopped on the shoulder of the highway, made sure that I still had some tire left to get off the road and not run my rim. Took a highway patrol no-do deal off the side of the highway across the bar ditch onto the old 66 and... 45 minutes later, I'm back on my way to work. That truck is heavy. That's all I can tell you. But luckily, in my back seat, where my wife and always makes fun of me and gripes at me for all the junk I haul in the pickup, there was a heavy-duty DeWalt Impact with the right socket on it to get my wheel and tire off. So anyway... $300 or $400 later, I'll be back on the road. So anyway, welcome to the show. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. Our current weather is 59 degrees and our humidity is 37. The Nathan Brewer dew point is 33. Winds are basically nothing southwest, 5 miles an hour, gust up to 7, but they're going to get on up. And later on, I'll tell you my Hobart Farm and Garden shopping adventure I had yesterday. And meanwhile, I got a guest on the show today with me. He'll be in right after this on the second segment. Kyle Shavinka, fire chief for the Elk City Fire Department. He's going to come on here and we're going to talk about preventions of fires, grass fires, and what causes them. And so the So you guys out there listening that's going to be welding tomorrow, you need to listen to the show today because there's no sense in even doing anything tomorrow. So anyway, grain prices, oh my gosh, they're up there. I'm excited. Hard red winter wheat, $8.22 a bushel. Corn is at $6 a bushel. I don't know the last time I've seen corn at $6 a bushel. Milo is even at $6.03. Soybeans, boom, $12.65 a bushel. Oats are even in the $7 range now at $7.01 per bushel. And cotton's hanging in there steady at $1.09. Soybean and grain futures were higher in overnight trading on concerns about global weather. Dry weather and crop stress is expected to continue in most of central and southern Brazil as dry conditions persist in those regions, said Don Keeney, an agriculture meteorologist with Maxar. Some rain in the forecast in the northern growing areas of Brazil. And you guys hear me talk about Brazil, Argentina, and Australia a lot in our weather and other stuff. Well, it pertains to crop prices, all kinds of prices in the United States, because if they're doing bad and we're doing good, we're going to sell more. So anyway, I talk about it a lot, so don't get annoyed about it. In Argentina, dry weather in northeastern growing areas will increase stress on plants. Still, some southern and western areas have ample soil moisture. In the United States, the southern plains, meanwhile, extremely dry weather's conditions continue with growing hard red winter wheat is at risk. Little or no rain has fallen in southwestern Oklahoma, the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, and as we all know right here in western Oklahoma in the past 60 days, according to the National Weather Service. About 20.1% of Kansas, who is the biggest producer of wheat in the United States, was seeing drought conditions up from 19.4% a week earlier and 6.38% 3 months earlier. Soybean futures for March delivery jumped 10.5 cents to $13.23 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. Soy meal was up $2.10 to $392.60 a short ton, while soy oil raised 0.52 cents to 54.46 cents a pound. Corn futures for March delivery was up 3.25 cents to $6.015 a bushel. Wheat futures for March delivery added 5.75 cents to $8.04 a bushel, while Kansas City futures gained 2 cents to $8.43 a bushel. Break-even prices for corn and soybeans are expected to be relatively high this year due to rising input costs, especially for fertilizer, according to a report from a group of agriculture economists. Well, I'm going to stop right there and grab this sheet of paper. This is a FYI before I finish reading what I was on. It takes 33 million BTUs to make 1 ton of ammonia. That's $125 worth of natural gas. If urea, 46% nitrogen, is $747 per ton, then ammonia, that is 82% nitrogen, is worth $1,334 per ton. That's a 1,076% markup. Now, maybe it costs something to build and operate ammonia production plant, but there's not that much labor costs. To me, it's beginning to look like there is some price gouging going on. All right, here we go back. The cost to break even in 2022 is going to be $4.73 a bushel for corn, $11.06 a bushel for soybeans, said a report from the University of Illinois' economists Gary Strickland, Nick Paulson, and Krista Swanson. Compared with the historical levels, these break-even prices are very high. The report says, while current fall bids are above break-even levels, the high break-even levels present risk in 2022. Supply disruptions, high commodity prices, and inflation will all contribute to the high cost of production next year. The biggest increase in prices will be for the fertilizer. A separate report last week from economists of the university said nitrogen price will continue to increase. On December 3rd, the price for anhydrous ammonia in Illinois was $1,434 a ton. That's a $91 increase from just 2 weeks later. Anhydrous prices more than doubled in the past year. The most recent report from economists said that non-land costs to grow corn in Illinois are forecast at $755 an acre, while cash rent costs are expected to be around $309 an acre. Soybean costs are predicted to be at $785 per acre, $476 in non-land cost, and $309 in cash rent. That's up from $651 an acre a year earlier. Well, is what we're going to talk about on our next segment. Read this. Fire weather conditions are expected in much of Oklahoma and Texas panhandles in the western Oklahoma throughout the weekend amid extremely dry weather. The driest weather will begin Thursday and last through Tuesday. A wind advisory is expected for Friday as sustained winds are forecast at 30 miles an hour with gusts up to 50 miles an hour in any given spot in that area I just told you about, basically our listening area. Strong winds, low humidity, and critically dry fuels will result in critical fire conditions across most of the area on Friday. Elevated fire weather conditions will remain possible each afternoon throughout the weekend into early next week. Red flag warnings have been issued for also parts of western Nebraska. So Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, look out, it's coming. Winds in Nebraska will be sustained at 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 25 miles an hour. That's skiing weather there, water skiing weather there. Relative humidity will fall as low as 14%, and any fires will spread rapidly, the agency said. All right, there we have it. Well, I got some more stories for you today. It's been an adventure for me since the show ended yesterday, and I got to work this morning. But we're going to be right back, and I got Kyle on the in the studio with me, and we're going to talk fire and other things that he needs to talk about for safety to prevent fire. So anyway, we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus. Red Angus cattle are just more docile as a breed, just bred into them. It's been that way for years since the inception of the breed. With two kids, and not just the kids, the older generation, they don't want to mess with bulls that are not gentle. Red Angus are more gentle to handle. We raise registered Red Angus, Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Is your cattle mineral investment being washed away? Weather can cause conventional mineral to absorb water and blow away. Simply put, your cows probably aren't eating it. That's why Purina created Wind and Rain Storm Mineral, a weatherized mineral that can stand up to the elements. Its larger particle size makes it harder to blow away and easier for water to pass through it. Keep money in your pocket. Contact Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City today.
Are you in the market to buy or sell cattle? Then don't miss Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale's every Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. Buyers can bid in person or online. To consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. That's 580-331-8547. Be sure and check out the market reports and each week's penny news. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and do appreciate it.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Kyle, do you believe in, what's the word I'm looking for here? Not lucky. Just being lucky, but there's a lot of good people in Western Oklahoma.
There is, yeah.
There's a bunch of good people. One of my stories from the venture from since yesterday is one of my best buddies, Russ Rundle, was headed yesterday morning on his way to go quail hunting up north by Gage. And he turned the corner out here west of town at Four Corners to head towards Cheyenne. And his, I remember if his son or son-in-law was, I think it was his son following him. And one of his dogs jumped out of the back of the pickup going 68 miles an hour. Okay. And they stopped, and the dog, when they hit the ground, must have just been scared and ran off. And he put that on Facebook and let everybody know. And I think that thing, his post was shared 200 times. And I was going to get up early this morning and get up there and start driving the roads like towards Berlin or something. You just never know. A bird dog's a bird dog, but they're tough. And this morning, I was awake, and I was laying there, and Russ posted on Facebook, a dog had been found at 1:30 this morning.
That's amazing.
There was a guy from coming back from Cheyenne from the hospital going home. Russ said to take a shower and clean up and go back up there. Son's in the hospital up there, and she was sitting there on the side of the highway. And so this gentleman was nice enough to stop and call Russ, and Russ was, he was sick. I mean, this is one of his favorite girls. She's one of my favorite dogs. But anyway, it was just good deed. And all I can say to that guy that stopped and called Russ at 1:30 this morning is thank you. And that was the best Christmas present Russ could ever have. Well, I got Kyle Schaffinke in here in the studio with me, and he's been fire chief for 6 months now?
Yeah, right at 6 months.
6 months. Did you get a ring or anything?
No, nothing like that.
Nothing like that. Well, he's the fire chief for Elk City, and we have a lot of listeners in the Texas Panhandle and Western Oklahoma that we're in dry conditions right now, as you well know.
Yes, we are. Yeah, critical conditions here in the next few days with the wind and everything. And we've been blessed here in Beckham County. We haven't had any big fires start over these last few critical days we've had.
Yeah, well, I used to be on the volunteer fire department at Foss, and we used to get some pretty good sized fires. Not these great big ones that we've had in the last 10 years, but I remember my firefighting days, and grass fires ain't no joke.
No, no. These last few that we've been on during this weather, when they're moving at 400 feet per minute or greater, it's just you can't get on top of them quick enough. And it's all about preparation of land and everything around those areas.
Well, I don't remember the name of the fire, but the one that was up there at Laverne, I can't remember the name. It wasn't the Ray fire. I don't even remember the name of that fire. They gave it a number or something up there that happened there 3 or 4 or 5 years ago that blasted a bunch of the panhandle in northwestern Oklahoma and southern Kansas. But I remember seeing that video of that highway patrolman going down the highway. He was doing 70, and he wasn't keeping up with that fire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just almost impossible with the smoke and the visibility and everything. It's crazy how quick they can move in this fine fuel that we have out here. You know, we don't have a lot of heavy timber, so it's all the fine fuels. And once that humidity or that fine fuel moisture gets down below 5%, they just move.
Yeah, it's just like it's gasoline.
Yeah,
it's crazy what happens. It's like I went up to Visite the other day and bought pre-made corners and H's because I don't want to weld out in the pasture.
Yeah, yeah, so. That's the biggest thing. Just really be watching if people are out welding. And, you know, I think the lack of fires we've had in Beckham County kind of speaks to people. No, it doesn't take much to spark one off. And if you don't have someone sitting there watching and have water ready, it doesn't take long for those to get out of control.
So. Yeah, and even with a fire watch guy with you, sometimes it's just – This is one of those deals. Just don't be that person.
Yeah.
And just hang on another few days. Or, you know, I think there's some moisture in the forecast towards the end of next week, unless they've changed it on me. But just wait till we get some moisture to do those kind of projects.
Yeah, I've seen the moisture predictions coming up. They're low, but they're there. And, you know, these last few critical days we had a little bit of rain in the morning. And I think that gets a lot of people thinking that it'll be okay that day. But it dries out so fast, so it needs to be a sustained moisture and keep those humidity levels up above 30% before you start doing any of that work.
Well, the one thing I wanted to talk with you about was, you know, yesterday I said on the show that one of my buddies was fighting that Raiden fire that was here just last week, wasn't it?
Early the Burks fire last week. We were up there with them.
Yeah, and that one house that got it wasn't prepared for fires.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of an oversight for a lot of people, but even in town or on the fringes of town, out in the county, you just really have to be prepared for your house at this time of year and make it the best for us to try to defend your house.
Right.
Because if it's grown up deep all the way against it and there's a lot of fences and trees and cedar trees, a lot of people plant cedar trees around their houses to block the wind, and it really makes it not defendable. Sometimes you can't get in front of some of those fast-moving fires that quick.
Because cedar trees are worse than gas.
Yeah, yeah. It's they amazing how up. Those go up.
I mean, they just blow up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no little ambers come at the bottom. It just
poof. Yeah.
So. What do you have to tell people to, you know, to help prevent, you know?
Yeah, so the big thing is if you live on pasture land with that fine fuel moistures and stuff and everything around you, if you have cedar trees around your house, you really just need to keep everything cut back, keep that grass scalp down, and kind of develop a perimeter around your structures, your barns, your house, and even your equipment. You know, a lot of people park their equipment out in pastures and it grows up because you don't graze those areas, and same thing with hay. You know, bare ground works real good, or at least scalped ground that's been grazed or mowed down. It lets us get on top of it quicker. And if you have a good 5 to 10 feet around your house, it's completely mowed down and you don't have a lot of leaves and things in the ridges of your roof where ambers can get caught and light the roof on fire, it does a lot of good.
Metal roofs come in handy.
Yeah, they do. And I want to say, I'm not 100% certain, but that house that burned up at that Burks fire, it had a metal roof on it, but it got up against it where and you couldn't get up there with it. The fire was moving too fast to try to intercept that right there.
How many fire departments was fighting that fire up there?
I'm not sure. There was, I know I saw probably at least 10, and we had every department from Beckham County had sent a truck as a Beckham County task force, so there were several of us up there. and all working together. And it ran real smooth. They did a really good job up there keeping the water and everything where you needed it. So,
well, we didn't have any of those task force back when I was fire chief at Falls.
Yeah.
So, but you know, Darren Murray was in there with me.
Yeah, sorry. No, Darren's a good guy.
No, I agree with you. I'm sorry, too. But how's the task force work? Is it county by county, or is it the area where the fire's at? Like, was it Raiden? Is Raiden or Cheyenne? Are they in charge of it, and you guys just coordinate with them? How's that work?
Yeah, so the task force model streamlines the operations for whoever's fired it is. So for those guys, they had an incident commander, and then he put out the call. The emergency manager did for other task forces and called us directly asking for us to send some trucks, and that keeps us from depleting one station in the county, because every department sends one truck, and then we send a supervisor with them, and then only that one supervisor reports to their incident commander, so there's not a lot of radio traffic, and they can assign us one mission, know there's enough trucks there to accomplish that.
Well, and plus, whoever's in charge up there in that general, they know the area better than you do.
Yeah, they do. So they usually team us up with some of their guys that will kind of show us the terrain, because like that, the terrain up that way gets pretty rough, or we're pretty flat out here, but there are some canyons and ravines, but not as many as they have.
Oh, no. Once you get basically north of Four Corners, the terrain changes all the way up to the Canadian River.
It does. And at least that was a daytime fire. The nighttime fires in that unknown terrain make it difficult as well.
Right. And they have graders out on this one?
Yeah, they had several graders. Roger Mills did a good job of getting graders out, and there wasn't a lot of pipelines in that area, so they were able to cut a lot of fire breaks. And the Forestry Service also had two of their dozers up there working.
Oh, good. Well, you just said something, pipelines. That's one of the hazards of fighting fires. And, you know, graders do a great job. I seen when we delivered some hay up to Laverne there 3 or 4 years ago after that big fire, I seen some canyons. How the heck did they get across those?
Yeah, I don't. They sometimes those graders and dozers go through things your trucks don't want to follow. But it gets pretty sporty.
Yeah, it's just you got, because we drove out in that guy's pasture to deliver some hay out in there with some dump trailers. Couldn't get semis in there, and I was driving along that road and I seen that fire break that they did just a couple miles north of Laverne, and I was like, I mean, and I've run a grader before. I was just like, these guys are good.
Yeah, they're trained. They know what they're doing, and they know where to stay. And so they put enough of fire trucks around them to keep the heat off of them.
Right.
So they can get in and out, because, you know, the ultimate goal at the end, everybody goes home. So and just trying to protect as much and stop as much of that forward progression as it can.
Was any livestock lost in that one up at Raiden?
I'm not sure. I don't remember seeing any reports of that.
I didn't either.
So, hopefully they... The way it burnt at the angle that it did, I think it left a lot of room for most of the cattle to get out of the way.
Just want to cut across there. That one that I seen up in Kansas in Russell County that was 40-something miles long, it didn't look like it was 2 or 3 miles wide, but, man, it just took off, and it wasn't spreading one way or the other.
No, and, you know, with the cattle in the land, we try, if we can, we can cut fences and kind of get those moved around, but there again, you know, you get in front of that fire. So there are some resources for farmers and ranchers on the Oklahoma Forestry website that gives you some tips and some ideas on how to safeguard your livestock and your equipment, hay and house and everything. So it's the, like I say, it's Oklahoma Forestry, and it's under their FireWise program. They have a pretty good handbook in there.
What's some of the tips? Can you know them off the top of your head?
Yeah, they talk about in some of the corners where you put your salt blocks and your mineral blocks out, you know, because they trample that area down so much it makes a non-combustible surface, so that gives them somewhat of a shelter spot. And it talks about which corners, depending on your prevailing winds and everything, on how that works. So there's several of them in there, but as long as they're in grazed land, that grazed land really helps, because we can get on top of those kind of fires, but that's that CRP ground and that real deep love grass. It's just hard to get on top of.
Yeah, and it's a bad deal, because one of my little stories from being on the fire department at Foss over there is we went to assist Clinton in a fire one day on Modell Highway between Foss Lake and Clinton, and Foss, all we had was, I think it was a 1959 Ford pumper, and we rigged up a bumper on the on the front of it to fight the fire off of it. But our water pump was PTO driven.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you know where I'm going with this. Well, remember I said 1959, and we went across there, and there's some of that big, just native CRP grass. You know, there hadn't been any cattle out there in years, and we was going across there just following the edge right there, just knocking it down, and there was a fire still coming behind us where it was coming together to burn, and our truck vapor locked.
Yeah.
And there's no water when the truck ain't running. And so I can't remember who was on there. I don't think it was Darren, but me and somebody else, all we could do is we hopped on top of the truck and laid down on the very top of it, and that fire went right underneath the fire truck.
Yeah, it gets hot whenever that happens.
And I remember
I've experienced that.
The fire chief, I think, was Wade then, and Billy Chalice was out there on the truck, and they come by laughing at me. Oh, you guys think this funny, huh? Yeah. So, anyway, but we got her fired back up after we, you know, it's good times.
Yeah, yeah. Some of those, the way they burn, it's hard to stay in the black or the burnt side all the time for protection.
Right.
But every now and then you get in that situation, especially when you're trying to get in front of something and stop it. Yeah, it'll go right over you really fast.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Well, do you got a few more minutes?
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. I got Kyle Szymanki, Elk City Fire Chief, here. We're talking about fire prevention and grass fires and good old times and all that other good stuff. We'll be right back after this. I'm Jimmy Clark, and this is Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction Market Report for Monday, December 13th. 1,503 head were sold. 3 head of steers at 400 brought 205. 6 at 673 brought 157.50. 17 at 761 brought 163.50. 34 at 858 brought 163. 8 at 997 brought 143. 3 head of heifers at 327 brought 160. 15 at 542 brought 146. 5 at 647 brought 146. 4 at 714 brought 121. 17 at 953 brought 131.50. Butcher cows were 46 to 82. Bred cows 650 to 13. 75 butcher bulls brought 56 to 91.50. Pairs brought 800 to 14.25. Western Oklahoma Livestock Auction, I-40 exit 71 in Clinton, Oklahoma. Sale every Monday at 10 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
In this area, a lot of people wean their calves off their cows in the fall. Wheat's planted in the fall, and they buy calves. They take them to the sale barn or maybe private treaty. They run them through the winter on wheat. And some sell in March before they cut their wheat. Some take them through May and graze out their wheat and sell them in May or run them through grass in the summer. I have cattle. The guys I work with, they have cattle. I'm a fourth generational rancher. I'm Monty Carlson, and I help make a difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
Great news, folks. Ron Hayes here to let you know SEI Agritech in Elk City is now your livestock nutrition center dealer. This is better quality feed and minerals for your cattle, horses, sheep, and goats. Plus, at SEI Agritech, you can buy everything from bulk to 50-pound bags. Call or go see SEI Agritech today about your feed and mineral needs. Their number, 580-225-0317. 580-225-0317. Better feed, better results.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Welcome back. 60 degrees. Humidity is dropping. 34. And the winds out still. Light winds out there. It's a beautiful day out there. When do you think it gets really critical on the humidity?
It's usually in the afternoons. I was just looking at the forecast for tomorrow, and it looks like afternoon is when those humidity levels are really going to start dropping, especially with clear skies and that sun up and the wind just dries everything out real fast.
Right. How long have you been on the fire department? How long have you been in
working? I've been doing fire and EMS work for about 16 years now.
16 years.
Started out over in Canute and worked my way over here to Elk City.
With Jeremy and Justin?
Yeah, Jeremy, Justin, Monty, and all those guys.
Sorry.
Yeah. Several family members. So
I know them real well. And so, can you think back and tell me what you think's been the biggest cause of fires? I mean, just the ones you've been participated in.
Yeah, so windy days is always, you know, power lines, it seems like. But, you know, they've kind of fixed a lot of that infrastructure now. They're really paying attention to that. A lot of times it's people burning debris, and they'll have it burnt the day before, a couple days before, and they won't pay attention to it after. and that, you know, big logs and things will smolder for a long time.
Whoa,
so
weeks.
One little ember blows out of that, and then it just starts a fire. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, whenever you have that on your land, you can be liable for a lot of damages and stuff like that if it's going to start moving and burning down power lines, fence lines, and even houses. So.
Right. Well, they, I know the power companies out there and all those big fires out in California, they end up being liable for it.
Yeah.
That was big, made, that's thousands of homes.
It seemed like that kind of set a new precedent whenever they started making that where they were liable. So,
yeah.
You know, there was a lot of land burn up out there.
It's dry. Well, good news is I got a report on that in my last segment. They're getting some drought relief out there, so prayers can be answered.
Yeah, they're dealing with a little flooding issues and runoff issues now that they lost their ground cover, it looked like. So,
so some preventions, you and I talked about it during the break, and you hit on it. You know, with being as dry as it is, wheat pasture slowly running out unless you have irrigation. It's starting to slow down. I've seen some wheat ground yesterday on my way to Hobart. Yesterday was just nubbed off to nothing. And hay is going to become very important.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, those big hay stacks everyone has everywhere that aren't on non-combustible surfaces, whether they plow under and put them on old oil field locations, something like that to protect it. And break that up into smaller batches so you don't lose all of your hay at once. Because, you know, I don't know if you've been on plenty of those. Once it gets into one bale, it just goes through the whole stack. And even if you have a tractor sitting right there, you hardly can ever save any of that hay.
Oh, yeah, it burns forever.
Yeah.
I remember back in the 80s over there because my landlord liked, or not my landlord, my boss, he loved that tobacco-smelling hay.
Oh.
And those things that catch fire sometimes, not stacked in a barn, I'm talking yep. about outside in the round bell, and them, he'd go in there with a front end loader on the tractor and try to break it away from the ones that weren't on fire. Those other ones would burn forever.
Yeah,
there's no use in putting water on them.
No, we just kind of stand back and try to protect the perimeter on that. If it's a few bales and the guys love it, they get to roll them out and try to break them up by hand sometimes. So
yep,
it's a pain.
Yeah, our hay that we stack down at our place, we stack it on the edges of our plowed ground, our farm ground, you know, and that's the least likely spot that any big wildfire could get across. It's not saying embers from somewhere else can't get on top of them, but I mean that's all any room we got. That's all we can put it.
Yeah, that's a good spot for it, though. It kind of protects it somewhat as best you can. So,
and I know when we was having all those grass fires or 3 or 4 years ago, we live on the river, and there, if that thing was to ever get on the river, unless Coulter Vault was over there, Bandy Silk over there, and their big rigs from Delhi, they're not scared of that river, and they'll get out in there and get after it. But we water, even when it's dry, we'll water the grass down outside of our house.
Yeah.
Just to make that ground wet, and things won't travel along that wet ground. And we got a metal roof and a brick house, so, you know, our chances are better than most that doesn't live in a wood frame or a trailer house.
Yeah, keeping it mowed down, keeping it wet, and that's what we'll do sometimes. I've been on some of those big fires where it's coming towards residences, and we'll just grab their garden hoses and sprinklers and set them up in the yard and turn them on and then move on to the next one, especially if they have it manicured. And never had a problem with that.
Well, I'll talk about that later. I thought we had somebody on here on the hotline, ag hotline on the fire deal. Well, Kyle, I can't appreciate you. Is there anything else you want to give people a heads up about the next 3 or 4 days? Because it looks pretty rough.
Yeah, we have that critical potential in the next few days. So if you see something come up, don't think someone else called, let us know. And if you're thinking about doing any burning, I would hold off till the moisture comes in.
Right.
Even if we have a good day with good humidities, if you can't make sure that's 100% out, then don't burn it.
And you've been waiting a couple of years to burn it anyway. What's the hurry?
It's not going to hurt to let it go. Your pile will just get smaller over time. So.
I've been around enough farmers and ranchers to know that's been on their schedule for months or years.
Yeah, the prescribed burning is something, you know, not right now. It's not the time. But, you know, with the city, we've done a lot of that, and we're planning on doing a whole lot more over in our well field to protect our wells. And, you know, you can do a lot with fire in the off season. And protect a lot of your acreage and everything with that. So
yeah, so you guys won't give me a heads up when that happens because I live right in the middle of that well field.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll see it coming now. We'll let
because,
you know.
Because my wife will be calling me, there's a fire.
Yeah.
It's like yesterday she said, there's somebody on the river. It sounds like NASCAR back there. And it was Trevor Britton in his airboat.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So, but I got to give you guys, the Elk City Fire Department, a big shout out while you're here.
All right.
And a few weeks ago, there was a bad wreck from the gentleman from Raiden out here by Hutch's West Side over there in TTS's yard and Hutton Construction there. But I got to witness that wreck. And I've been up to wrecks where it's not been good. And
yeah.
I was dreading walking up there to that pickup because me and this other lady, and I don't know who that lady was. I wished I'd found out who she was. We were running up there. We couldn't find him, and then found him in the back seat, and I raised his head up out of the floorboard, you always raise their head up during elevate their head. And so all the blood doesn't go to their brain. I guess that's what I was taught in the military. But you guys showed up, and your EMSs were calm, and everybody just did their job steadily. Nobody was overdoing it. And you got him out of there, got him to the hospital, and then I think they medi-flighted him, didn't they?
Yeah.
They medi-flighted him. So, a number one job to you guys. And it didn't take – when I was running up – to the pickup, it didn't seem like but seconds, because there was another lady out on the highway calling you 911, and it didn't seem like it was seconds I could hear you guys sirens coming, and that's a long ways from the fire station.
Yeah, it is.
It's called what, 3 miles?
Probably so.
Yeah, three miles. Right, but anyway, big pat on the back for you guys and your fire department.
I appreciate you. They work hard, train every day, just
all
so
except
they can
for
do
Darren.
That. So yeah. I don't remember if Darren was. He might have been there.
Yeah, he was
so
there.
He was
no,
there. So.
No, he was
yeah.
there. Because he walked up. What are you doing here? I said, just participate.
Well, you know he's listening. So
yeah, I know he's listening. Anyway, he says he always listens, and then the day before yesterday, what time's your show? So he's lying. He didn't listen. So anyway, well, thanks again.
All right, appreciate having you on anytime.
All right, and I've been talking with Kyle Shavinky, Elk City Fire Chief here in Elk City, Oklahoma, and we're talking about the high fire dangers we got coming up in the next 3 or 4 days, so I hope everybody enjoyed that, but we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
When we're all on the same page, things run smoother, work gets completed faster, life is easier, and that's exactly what advanced technology from Valley does. Icon X brings all of your pivots together into one manageable network with full remote capabilities, regardless of the brand. Get the most out of your pivots at a fraction of the cost of a full panel upgrade. Valley Icon X. Any brand of pivot. One connected network. Smart irrigation. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325 or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
This hour's weather brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden. Complete nutrition for every animal, that's what you'll find in Hi-Pro Feeds. At Hi-Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local Hi-Pro Feeds dealer. Providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks. See their ad in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook. See all they have to offer at HobartFarmAndGarden.com. That's HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Well, before I get into this Long Ranger provided to you every day by Hobart Farm and Garden down in Hobart, Oklahoma, right there in Kiowa County, I traveled down there yesterday to go look at some shotguns. Well, I got this bad habit. If I look, something's going to happen. So anyway, went back there with Joe Bob in the back. We looked at some shotguns, and I ended up purchasing a 20-gauge semi-automatic Benelli, and I ended up purchasing a 12-gauge semi-automatic Browning A5, the Black Stalker. Man, it's a dream jewel down there. But they have all kinds of stuff down there. I could have stayed down there all afternoon, but I was on a mission and end up doing it. They deal with you, and they got lots of stock, and they got one cool warehouse out front where they've got anything from any needs that a farmer or a rancher or even a homeowner needs. Outside, they have the working chutes. They got all kinds of chutes, cattle panels, deer feeders, corn feeders. There's no end to it. It's a great place to shop. I mean, we have wonderful places around Western Oklahoma to shop, but I honestly can tell you that I spent some money down there yesterday. And then I left there, went on my way home, and I'm going to continue that story of what I did on my way home after I do this forecast. So it's 61 degrees, the wind's still pretty calm, 6 miles an hour, humidity's slowly dropping, it's at 32 now. High today, 71, low 47 tonight, shouldn't be no frost, dew, fog like this morning. That's one of the other reasons I got the heck off of I-40 this morning, because of that fog. And I wasn't going to be one of those incident numbers. I just didn't want to. Even if it run a $400 wheel to get off the highway and down there in the bar ditch on the 066, I just didn't want to be there, because Drew was saying something before, right after his Tradio show, that there was a 100-car pileup up in Wisconsin. And then last week or this week, they had the trial of that truck driver that killed 4 or 8 people up in Colorado a couple years ago because he lost his brakes. And man, just interstates are just not a good place to be at. Stopped anyway. Tomorrow, breezy. Fire watch starts at 6 p.m. tomorrow, or ends at 6 p.m. tomorrow. It starts at 6 a.m. or noon tomorrow. 84 degrees. Christmas Eve, 84 degrees. Wind southwest out of the 17 to 25 miles an hour with wind gusts right here in Elk City. The higher you go in our listening area in the land and farther out west in the eastern Texas panhandles, there are buddies out there at Wheeler and Canadian and Shamrock. We have 60 mile an hour gusts going to be going on out there. So no matter where you are and you're listening on the radio right now, it's going to be breezy tomorrow. 72 degrees for high. Winds out of the west at 12:15 on Christmas Day. Sunday, 81 degrees, winds coming back up. It won't be as severe as tomorrow, but they're going to be there because they're going to be 22 mile an hour, gusting up to 30. And then Monday, calm winds switching from the north-northwest, and 67 degrees, cool down just a little bit, but still nice, 67 degrees. Just our weather's crazy this week. So on my way home yesterday from Hobart, I stopped at Granite. And this is where soil testing comes in so much. And I should have done it a few years earlier. There was a lot of assumptions going on, and assuming got me nowhere. And my son has a place there just to the east of Lone Wolf, right before you get to the river bridge by the North Shore at Lugard Lake. He's got a place down there, an 80 down there, and we got a pivot on it. And when he bought that, it was in the third year of alfalfa, same age as my alfalfa around Carter. And they gave me the reports of when we bought that place of what the hay was making. It was pretty decent, 3,000, 3,200 pounds an acre, somewhere in that range. I don't remember the exact deals looking at the numbers. Jared's got the file. And the third year we had it, was using irrigation, and we'd been getting a little bit of rain too, and it was making around 2,600-2,700 pounds. And I thought, man, maybe I did something wrong. Well, the fourth year, there was a lot of marishtails and careless weed that had blown over from a neighbor off their land and growing in there. And I was blaming the quality of hay and the quantity on it. Fifth year, that alfalfa went totally backwards. I mean, got everything we need. We got a good farm, got a good good water. We got some of the best water in that area, blessed with plenty of water. But so we had another gentleman coming in, start helping us farm that deal down there, and we were doing this and doing that, and because my equipment was needing to stay up around the Carter, Delhi area, and so he took it over. We grew some hay in there, but wheat there last year. Was going to use it. Alfalfa was done. That wheat hay was making 5-6 bales of hay per acre. I mean, it was some of the best wheat hay I've ever seen in my life. Daryl did a great job with that. And then we planted some cotton. Well, the cotton under the pivot wasn't worth the trouble of planting. We couldn't figure it out. The dry land cotton outside on the pivot corners and back in the west side of the property where there's about 8 or 10 acre neck there that no water's in there, that cotton did pretty good. And it was too late. The cotton was up and didn't look like, but every 10th stock come up. Sent soil samples off because we're wanting to clean it up and put it back in alfalfa because we got a really nice hay barn there. And got soil samples back finally yesterday. Got the water samples back. I had to stop and get another water sample yesterday on the little well because it was contaminated when I took it in the bottle I took it in. We didn't know it at that time. Soil samples come back. But before I go into the next detail, about 3 years ago, one of the farmers down there told me that was the highest he had seen the water table ever. And if you guys remembered, in 2018 we had some rains come through here, 8-inch rains twice in a month, and got Lugard filled back up and water tables was coming back up. But we were also just getting out of that big drought we had in 2015, so everything was adding up. And water tables back up, getting pretty close back to normal, and blah 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 and everything. Well, we didn't know it, but our damage was being done from the bottom up. And brine, salt, was being pushed back up through the ground. And, alfalfa roots can be 5, 10, 15 feet long down there, wherever it has to grow to get into all the good moisture. And that's, cotton doesn't like salt water or salt ground. It doesn't like that. And the alfalfa, it just slowly killed it over 3 years' time. Yeah, there was 2 great years in there, but it was just slowly going downhill, and I was blaming weeds and neighbors and chemicals and all kinds of stuff. And Daryl was pulling his hair out of his head, what little hair he has down there, why that cotton wasn't doing very good, and the dry land looked normal, and the irrigated looked like crap. But we figured it out. So now we got us a game plan, and we're going to go forward with a game plan. It ain't 100% worked out yet, but at least now we know what the issue is. And legumes, peanuts, alfalfa, cowpeas, iron and clay peas ain't on our list to be planted down there right now. So we're going to do some with the help of agronomists, and we're just going to, with the help of that, we're going to get the ground repaired and get back to normal on the farm ground. So that's one of my stories from yesterday. Figured out, do some good, some bad, but still got a couple shotguns, and everything was good. Well, here we go. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. The Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, announced December 21st, and it is debating whether over-the-top use of dicamba herbicide can be used in a manner that does not pose unreasonably risk to non-target crops and other plants, or is to be listed species that they're designated critical habitats. This one finding in the agency's 73-page 2021 incident report, in which the EPA said it received roughly 3,500 dicamba-related incident reports from 2021 growing season. More than 1 million acres of non-dicamba tolerant soybean crops were allegedly damaged by off-target movement of dicamba. A range of non-target agriculture crops were allegedly affected by dicamba, such as sugar beets, rice, sweet potatoes, peanuts, and grapes. Dicamba allegedly damaged non-agriculture plants and trees, such as those that grow near homes and in wild areas, included a 160,000 acre wildlife refuge. More than 280 incident reports came from counties where additional restrictions are required to protect endangered species, which dicamba is applied to dicamba tolerant soybean and cotton crops. In the summary news release, EPA said that based on prior research and numerous stakeholdings, EPA has reason to believe the number of incidents reported significantly understates the actual number of incidents related to dicamba. So basically what they're saying, the American Soybean Association, the National Cotton Council, and American Farm Bureau Federation are raising questions about data released December 21 by EPA. I'm telling you both sides of the story here, everybody. So I'm not picking on dicamba. I'm just reading both sides of the story. And released December 21st by EPA regarding reported dicamba off-target complaints during the 2021 growing season. Growers are concerned with the potential of significant gaps in the data provided by EPA. For example, it is not clear whether complaints were submitted to multiple sources, regulators, or were therefore double counted. It's unfair if the EPA, state regulators, and other investigated complaints to verify injury or access potential causes. Alan Meadows, a soybean grower from Halls, Tennessee, and ASA director, said the agriculture community expects regulators to be clear with the data on which they are making decision. It's concerning the information released provides an incomplete picture. Data that is not present in this EPA release may tell as much or more about the story than what the agency has included. As you guys know, we got a new agency here in the last year, and things are changing. The NCC chairman, Kent Fountain, a Chicago cotton producer, I'm sorry, Chicago, Georgia cotton producer, said EPA's report doesn't align with what the U.S. cotton industry has seen and heard in the field. The data needs to be analyzed carefully to ensure accuracy because dicamba is too important to our industry for decisions to be made on incomplete or faulty data. AFBF President Zippy Duvall, that's a crazy name, Zippy Duvall. The decisions EPA is making regarding herbicides have wide-ranging consequences for American farmers and ranchers, so they should be made after careful review and consideration of peer-reviewed science. The stakes are simply too high to make major label changes without due diligence from the EPA to learn all the facts surrounding reported incidents. American farmers deserve a fair process as they work to use climate smart practices to produce food, fuel, and fiber for our nation. There you go. I told you both sides of the story, what's going on with dicamba. Just like all the crap that's went on last 10, 15 years with Roundup. So there's always two sides of the story, and I'm going to try to tell you both of them, and I'm pretty sure I'll be backing our farmers and ranchers on their side of the story, because sometimes the EPA is more political than science, and I hope you agree with me on that. Also, right before we get to go, I didn't know this. This guy texted in while I was talking about the deal. You can buy H braces in Delhi, Oklahoma, free delivery. 50 miles, Nate Quinn, H braces and corners, Delhi, Oklahoma. Thank you for that. I know that now. I won't have to go clear to Visai. You guys have a great day. It's the Day in Ag.
Hello. Here's a station you might like.
This is KECO, Elk City.
Potential COVID spread on planes. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News. As millions of Americans travel for the holidays, a new report warns of a higher risk of contracting coronavirus aboard aircraft.